Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to unlock the combination to your life's true potential.
Living Out Loud
with Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. Dr. Birnbaum is a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. She's an expert on depression, women's issues, attaining happiness, and so much more.
You got a gift, my friend.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
Hold
on. Yes, you do.
Now, here's Dr. Frieda Birnbaum,
Living Out Loud.
Well, thank you for the wonderful introduction. It's appreciate that. And today we're going to have a great show with the wonderful, inspirational guest, Melanie Young. And the title is Getting Things Off My Chest. So we're going to start soon. I think, is the guest there yet, Ryan? Or hi,
sure,
Ryan,
she'll
how
be on,
are you?
She'll be on shortly. I'm doing fantastic, and a lot has happened since the last show you did. And one of the most shocking things that occurred where you were doing a lot of discussions, actually, you know what? Melanie is on, but I was wondering if you wanted to quickly discuss the German Wings accident.
I would love to, and you know, we're still talking about it. We still can't understand how, when a person gets depressed, why would they do such a thing? Well, you know, this pilot was planning this for a long time. It didn't just happen at the moment. And he was really looking forward to his glory, to having the opportunity to be seen as someone who made news. So this is more than just someone who is depressive and suicidal. He really planned on taking a lot of people with him. And that's the scary part, that the airlines tested him, and he had been told, they were told, and he had told them that he was someone with depressive episodes in the past. And they went ahead thinking that he passed the test this time, he'll be fine. And obviously, he was not fine. And so it was something that was overlooked, and we really need to make changes with what we make decisions with as far as having these pilots fly. We test the airplanes. Every little screw and bolt has to be perfect. I think it's time we did the same thing with these pilots who really should not be working as a pilot to begin with.
Great. And Dr. Frieda, your guest is here. She's with us right now. Would you like to introduce her? Would you like me to introduce her?
Absolutely. Her name is Melanie Young, and she wrote a book, Getting Things Off My Chest. Welcome to our show, Melanie.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely, and I love your title. Did you come up with that title? It's so creative.
Yes, I did. It started as a blog called Getting Things Off My Chest, and then it became the book.
I see. And there's a saying here that sort of captured me when I was reading about the book and about yourself, and it said, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. Would you like to talk about that for a minute before we get into your book? Well, this
Absolutely.
Is part of your book, actually.
You know, I think that it's important to view yourself and to create the vision of the person you want to be and not be a reflection of what others want you to be.
That's so difficult, and that's so important.
Very difficult.
That. It's very difficult.
Very, very difficult for many people.
We are brought up to try to please other people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us,
and we live up to
women.
So many other people's expectations that, and we're constantly comparing ourselves to others, and it's harder and harder because there's so many avenues for sharing and seeing how other people are doing, and it can stress people out if they are constantly trying to measure up to what everybody else is doing, and sometimes you just have to put your blinders on and focus on yourself.
And not only that, a lot of these people don't know what they're doing themselves. So look
exactly.
Who we're looking to. So we're really
you have
not
to have
going
strong
to.
Inner vision first.
Absolutely. And that takes a lot of wisdom and experience as well in life. So let's
yes.
let's talk a little bit about what happened to you. What was your diagnosis? What did they say? Did they give you a specific?
Yes. I was diagnosed with stage, and you usually are with breast cancer cancers. I was
yes.
diagnosed with stage 2A.
Okay.
Estrogen receptive positive, HER2 new negative breast cancer. I had three tumors, two in one breast and one in the other. So that was the diagnosis. And that, based on that diagnosis, the treatment was determined.
So stage 2.
2A.
So
there's different stages, 2A, 2B, blah, blah, blah.
Okay,
and
so
mine was 2A,
which
means early stage, which is good.
Right, so that means early stage. So you had some opportunities to have a good potential outcome. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, it's always best for any illness to be diagnosed in an early stage, but I want to be clear, if you were diagnosed at stage 3 or stage 4, it's not a death sentence. One of my best friends was diagnosed at stage 3. I have some friends who have been diagnosed at stage 4, and they are living a healthy life. I mean, stage 3 is in remission, and stage 4, they are living with cancer, but they're living a full life within what they have.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that a lot of these doctors say, you know, stage 4, that's it, it's over. And yet that does not apply to everyone. And so that fear factor that you write about is so important to be able to take that hold of that and to know
mm-hmm.
that you can have possibilities no matter what the diagnosis is. Isn't that right?
Yeah. You have to believe in possibilities. You can't say to yourself, this is over, this is a death sentence. First of all, as I said, I know people who are living with cancer, which means they are living with cancer, and it's part of their life, and they're living long. So that's part one. Part two, you could be diagnosed at an early stage, go through treatment, and have a recurrence. So there's always that possibility as well. So it teaches you, going through the experience, to live life better.
So tell us, how did you gather such strength? You have such an outlook, and you have the abilities to find a path that works for yourself. But not everyone has that kind of stamina, especially when you're diagnosed with something that could be so devastating.
Well, doctor, I had two choices. I could wallow in misery and be, you know, go the half empty route, cup half empty, or I could go the other route. And I think positivity is healthier than negativity. So, you know, I wanted to win the battle against cancer, not be defeated. So that was my intention. And when I thought about what were the steps I needed to take, I'm fairly methodical the way I think. I knew that I wanted to go armed in with the best information and the best doctors, but I also wanted to make sure I was doing everything possible to enable health. So I drew on my inner strength, and that's just my own character. But I will be honest, everybody has that in them. You know, it takes as much energy to be negative as it does positive.
Well, that's you as well, as you just said. This is who you are. You're someone who has that ability to have a support system within yourself. But what would you tell other women that were newly diagnosed? What path should they take? How should they begin this journey?
Well, I want to be clear that it was not easy for me. It sounds like, yeah, I was so strong. I was depressed. I had to pull myself up as well. Everybody does. When you hear the words you have cancer, you are really devastated. And my father was dying at the time. I was in debt. There was a lot of things happening. But, I didn't want to die. And I wanted to be healthy again. So that was the core. So you have to set your intentions. If you were diagnosed with cancer or any grave illness, the most important thing you need to do is set an intention and say, look, this is terrible. This is really terrible. But I will do everything I can to fight it because I believe in life and I believe in myself and I am valuable to this world. And you have to believe that. You need to create a support network. very important that you don't fight this alone, that you lean on people that you trust who can help lift you up when you're feeling down, whether it's your spouse or a significant other or a parent or a best friend. Create a support network. It's perfectly normal to say, I need help. You will lean on your doctors, and you will learn to listen to them. I learned to listen to doctors. I was used to being an authority. I had to shut up and listen. And it's important that you realize that. If you're a soldier, if you're a general going to war, you have an army, right? If you're running a company, you have a board of directors. You create the support network, your board, who will help you and advise you and be there for you. And frankly, you eliminate everything else. This is a time to dial down and let go of things that are stressful. Whatever you can let go of or delegate to someone else or have someone help, ask them. You will find that many people, once they hear you've been diagnosed, there are so many people who want to reach out and help. Take advantage of it. Don't be, I don't need your help. Say thank you. Let me think about it and get back to you when I have a better idea of what you need. Everybody will rush in the very beginning, everybody. And as treatment wears on, fewer people around. Learn to lean on people and say, I could use a laugh. How, you know, I could use the companionship. It's good to do that. Let people help you.
I'm just going to interrupt and say that's something that's a life lesson that we can use even when we don't have to feel rescued, because as you said, nobody's really strong all the time, and this is a devastating situation.
Right.
And something else you mentioned about the doctors, you know, listening finally, because as someone who is successful, you've had leadership qualities and to let go. But it's also important for the listeners to know that even with our doctors today, we've evolved so much that we have to do a lot of the work as well. So it's a two-party commitment, both the doctors and yourself working together. So did you cut out any negative people in your life? Did you keep those people? What happened with the peers?
That's a really interesting question, and yes, I did. I had a company, a small company, public relations company. I chose not to tell anybody in my professional world that I had cancer. There are several reasons for this. One, sadly, I'm in an image business, PR. I'm no longer in it, but at the time, it's fairly cutthroat, and it's stressful, which was an issue. I knew that stress was a big factor in leading me to where I was. I saw that coming. I didn't see breast cancer, but I saw other signs of being fairly toxic. And so I chose not to tell my clients because I didn't really want to risk having them disappear suddenly. Like, oh, who wants to be with, you know, like go find, you know, it's business. Let's go find someone else to handle business. I didn't need that stress. So I kept them away from my life. I just quietly worked. I had a small staff. We all agreed to keep it confident. They covered for me. I did the work I could. Didn't make a lot of appearances. Thank God technology. So that was the first thing I did, is I didn't let cancer into my professional life. That is a very personal and professional decision that everyone has to understand individually. I had a close network of friends. They were let into my life. I was very careful. A lot of well-wishers would call and say, I have the best doctor. Let me tell you about this. I was very careful about taking people's advice because it became overwhelming. So my husband, David, was wonderful. He would kind of filter the calls that would come in so that I wasn't deluged. To the point, seriously, pretty where I said, I don't want to talk about cancer except on Fridays. Like, if you want to talk to me about cancer, I'll talk on Fridays. Office hours are Fridays, but the rest of the week, I want to live with the rest of my life. And that's how I dealt with, it's not eliminating people, but it was like not letting the floodgates open up, which is very similar to eliminating.
That is an interesting,
and that's how I did it.
Yes. That's very interesting what you just said. We have a neighbor that has stage 4 lung cancer for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard about it, I saw him in a restaurant, and he said, you have to sit down. I have to tell you, I have 2 weeks to go. I said, what? So, of course, I didn't eat anything. I just couldn't get over it. And he's been living on, and hopefully he will continue. with the right medication and treatment. But you're right, there's some kind of stigma attached to the fact that just by talking about it, he's seen differently. And I don't know if that's such a good thing, because to be someone who's victimized is someone who is being treated differently by other people. And it's not really the right kind of connection, a flow of back and forth. It's a little stagnant. So,
well, you know, it's sad, but it's true. My best friend was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. Unfortunately, it did travel into her lungs and her brain, and she did not make it. And I watched as certain people who were supposedly her friends disappeared from her life. And you see that, too. Sometimes you let people go, but unfortunately, there are people who cannot watch you have cancer, and they let you go.
And that's when you need them the most. So
you don't really need those kind of people, really, if they're not going to be there for you and be understanding. You know, my mother was like that. She doesn't do disease. My mother doesn't do disease. My mother's a social columnist, and she was
convenient.
Yeah, she lives in Tennessee. Unfortunately, I was diagnosed just about when her husband of 52 years was being put into hospice with metastasized cancer. She could only handle one cancer at a time. It was too much enough with her husband. You know, she was, you know, she wanted to know where her husband, who used to be her escort at all the parties, was. Well, he was dying, but she never wanted to see that. So when I called her to say I had cancer, but after she gave me a whole list of all the fun things she was doing in her life and going here, I said, wait a minute, Mom, can I just tell you one thing in my life? And she, it was very hard for her to process it. And to this day, she doesn't really want to talk about it, other than she, you know, my daughter, the author, my daughter's the speaker, but she'll never want to address what I went through.
What
and
is
I don't hold it against
like?
Her.
Oh, you don't hold
you know,
it
we have a loving, respectful relationship, but it obviously it's not that kind of mother and daughter. It's not terms of endearment. But, you know, I accept the fact that this is not one, and she'll say, I don't handle disease well. She didn't handle it with my father well. And, you know, because I saw that happening, I knew not to lean on her. And so I knew she wasn't someone to talk about what I was going through with. She didn't want to hear about it. My husband, on the other hand, he was right there. I have friends who, you know, want to hear every detail. So you have to pick and choose who you want to talk to about. Most people don't want to hear the nitty-gritty about what you're going through in treatment. They just want to, you know, when people go, how are you doing? It's such a superficial question when it comes to cancer. Most of the time, they just want to hear, I'm okay, I'm fine, thank you for asking. They don't want to hear, oh, well, you know, I threw up today. They don't want to hear it.
So what do you say to them when they ask you, how are you?
Well, it's interesting. I've written articles about this because I'm very careful about asking it to people. When people ask me, I said I am doing as well as considered in treatment. I'm taking very good care of myself, and I appreciate your asking. And I didn't get into much else. I go, and how are you? And how are you doing? And throw it back. You know, when I have friends who have cancer, I don't call and say, how are you doing? I usually say, I'm calling and I'm thinking about you and wanted to chat. And then I'll say, you know, obviously I've been thinking about what you're going through and want to do a check-in. And I'll leave
it
just
like
that.
So what have you done? What have you done for yourself that the listeners can learn to go ahead and give themselves some good opportunities? Because after all, doctors are important and they sustain us and they help us to live. But then again, there are things they don't tell us. So what advice would you give on that in that area?
Well, if you are a seemingly healthy woman or man, okay, which is, I assume you're talking about someone who's healthy right now and not been diagnosed, you need to be your own advocate. I am a true believer in making sure that you keep your annual exams and you stay up to date on your medical history, your family history, your exams. I don't consider it a badge of pride and honor to say, oh, I haven't been to a doctor in 5 years. Maybe you should go. Because, you know, get that mammogram. I mean, you know, be vigilant about your health, but also take better care of yourself. It's a partnership with your doctor, health. You need to have your own personal wellness program, and this involves, one, watching your diet, trying to add in healthier foods, watch your portions, and crowd out junk. Two, get moving. I'm not going to say the exercise word, because a lot of people say, oh, I hate to exercise. Then take walks. Walk your dog. Play with your kids. Get moving. Take the stairs, not the elevator. Park further away from the mall. Whatever it takes, try to get 20 to 30 minutes a day. Drink more healthy water, fluids like water or herbal tea, because dehydration is something that can creep up on you by surprise and make you quite sick and also impair your cognitive ability. And finally, and goodness, we're all guilty of this, you know, detach, disconnect, get back into the present, and take time for yourself every day. We all work hard. Many of us need to work. Many of us want to work. But you have to take time for yourself, whether it's creatively, that's resting, whatever. Take time out for yourself. It is important.
That's something that we all know, but many of us don't do.
I'm always, you know, I preach it, and yet I have to remind myself. But through my writing, it has reined me in, because I was the classic workaholic who didn't take care of herself, put my clients and my business first. Where did it leave me? It left me in the chemotherapy suite. So knowing that I didn't want to go back on that trip again to cancer land, I made myself make changes. But it's hard when it's practically in your DNA, and often it is, you know, to drive and succeed and go and, you know, blah, blah. You have to almost re-engineer yourself. And it's hard, but so how do you do it? You find support to help you. If you need a coach, get a coach. If you go to support groups, go to support. If you want to go to a church and join a church group to kind of center you, do it. Find something that centers you if you feel your life is getting off kilter. And if you need help, it's there.
So what did you find that centered you? So you're no longer working in this career that you had before. And what did you find that you connected to and that you enjoy doing?
I love to write.
Uh-huh.
I've always loved to write since I was a little girl. I've been a diarist. It's what I love to do more than anything, and that is what grounded me during treatment. I had very bad chemo brain, which means you're kind of fogged, and so I wrote my diary, and it was my way of expressing everything, and that became, you know, obviously two books and a blog. So writing for me is key. And I also love to dance. I move.
Oh.
And when I'm very stressed, I either get up and dance, you know, put the music on and just go, or I go to my computer and write. Or, you know,
so
tell
us,
terrible handwriting
are you
now.
Are you a spiritual person as well? You sound like you're spiritual. Like,
very.
Do you have a religion or belief?
I probably less faith-based, but more. I've always been a spiritual person. And it comes through, particularly in my second book, Fearless, Fabulous You, it comes through a lot. I'm very spiritual. And that has grounded me as well. Faith. And my faith starts with faith in myself. Faith that I am worthy. I am a worthy, gifted individual, and I truly believe, and I will say this to anyone, everyone out there listening is gifted. You have to realize that and find a way to use your gifts. In my case, I say in the beginning of my book, I took losing my breath to find my voice. I've always been a gifted communicator. I was communicating in another way through public relations, but through cancer, I learned to re-engineer and focus my communication in writing and speaking and, you know, doing my own show and everything. And that has brought me greater purpose, but also more pleasure in what I do. So I, you know, urge everybody to think about what brings them joy and what their skills and talents are, and sit down on a piece of paper, write 20 other ways you could be using it. And it's great how that grounds you back. And spiritually, whoever or whatever you believe in, you have to believe in yourself first.
You have to believe in you. It's so solid, and this is something that is helpful for anybody at any stage that they're in. And to live this kind of life is the way to go at your peak, at your peak of existence. And I agree and I hear from what you're saying that cancer is not getting in your way of living on that peak. And that's so important for the viewers to know that mm-hmm. you can live a wonderful life and everything else can take second place if you have the ability and the insight to know what is important and how to take priority and what direction to go into. So this is mm-hmm. something for everyone, cancer, not cancer, it doesn't really matter, because the moments we exist, that's the moments that are important in our all our lives, and mm-hmm. the quality of our lives is really what makes a difference. Well, I just want to give the listeners the name of your book again, which is
Getting Things Off My Chest, A Survivor's Guide to Staying Fearless and Fabulous in the Face of Breast Cancer. And the second one, which is not about cancer, but about finding and transforming your life and putting yourself in check, is called Fearless Fabulous You, Lessons on Living Life mm-hmm. on Your Terms.
And where could our listeners reach you if they wanted to?
You can find me, yes, www.melanieyoung, MelanieYoung.com. I'm also on Twitter at Mighty Melanie and Facebook, Fearless Fabulous Melanie. And my books are available through my website and, of course, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, indie bookstores, and whatnot.
Well, you're definitely fearless and fabulous, that's for sure.
Oh, thank
you.
It's so nice of you to say.
It's for sure. And, I mean, that's what you need to call yourself, the fearless and fabulous Melanie Young. That's your new title.
Yeah, well, that's what I put on my Facebook page, and I'm kind of going that way through it. And for me, that grounds me back. When I'm having one of my days, you know, when I'm, like, not feeling so great, I remind myself, what can you do to set an example for yourself or others that you can be, even in the face of, you know, whatever's going on? And it's your choice.
For sure, and you definitely will have a lot of followers. I'm sure you do already when you do have that voice out there for people to hear what I heard and my listeners to hear what they heard and to continue giving that strong message, which is a wonderful gift. So thank you so much for being on our show. And,
well, thank you. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me. I really do.
Absolutely. And our viewers, I'm sure, have gotten a lot from listening to you.
I hope so.
So thank you. Yes.
All right.
For sure they have. Thank you so much, Melanie, for being on the show.
Thank you. And I really appreciate it. And stay fabulous.
Yes, you, and you continue to let us know about you. And if you have the opportunities to get in touch and for us to hear more about what's going on, it would be great for our viewers to be more informed as well. So it was a great show.
I will do that. And the first thing is, you know, let's connect socially. That's always a good one. I'm pretty active on social media.
Okay, that's good to know. And you can reach me on my website, Dr. Frieda mm-hmm. Birnbaum, and we'll go from there.
I've seen it. I've seen your website, so yes.
It was a fabulous show. A good
Thank
job.
You,
and we're running out of time, so I think we're going to have to say goodbye for now. Thank you very much, Melanie.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Dr. Frieda.